We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, and I am joined by Sean Seal of RotoViz.com, co-owner of the website, co-host of Stealing Bananas, and obviously co-host of RotoViz Overtime as well. Sean, we did a best ball mania draft over at Underdog Fantasy. As longtime listeners will know, you can sign up over there, use the code RotoViz, get yourself a 100% sign-up bonus up to $100. But Sean, we're going to talk through the team. You teased it at the end of that draft that there's some selections that you may have done different. I think it went pretty well, but we'll see how things play out as we discuss it through here. It is basically an instant reaction pod to how things went. But before we get into the draft board, Sean, we are here on Saturday's podcast. Hopefully all the listeners got involved in the Scott Fishbowl contest that did close yesterday. Announcement will be made on who has won that on Twitter today, and then we'll let you know on the podcast next week who has won. But Sean, how are you doing as we close out this week? And I guess I'll peel back the curtain. I've been in a little bit of agony this week. Some people may have seen on Twitter that I hurt my back over the last week or so. I was outside earlier today, got my daughter a kind of a water gun. She thought, yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to spray some flowers with it, will spray the wall. And yeah, she had very little sympathy as I wasn't able to barely move and decided that she was going to soak me a little bit. So I think she gets her her lack of empathy hopefully isn't coming from me at this point in time. But Sean, we are here on Saturday. How are you feeling at this point of the week?
Good. No one used me for target practice, so I don't have to deal with that. My back is currently going well. Colin, I know that you're hurting, as there have been times when you kind of disappeared from the pod over the last couple of recordings where you've had to get up and walk around, and I find myself kind of going it alone, which obviously you've got to fight through, right? I mean, this is just like Sunday. You turn an ankle, you got to get back up and get back out there. So you have done a good job with that. And that leads us into what we're here for, which was a draft where, despite the discomfort that you were battling, we had a great time and I think selected a very fun team. Colin, one of the things that we know that we're going to run into with the year of data that we have in the Underdog Roster Construction Explorer, Michael Dumner has gone over this in some really cool articles comparing and contrasting the 2021 season with previous seasons, looking at that in a bigger picture from sort of across the tools. If you've been missing his articles, make sure you get out there and check them out. They are absolutely fantastic. They'll change the way you play best ball for the better. You'll be able to really ramp up your winnings in these contests. And then if you read Connor O'Driscoll's piece on zero RB and not thinking, overthinking uniqueness, then you know exactly what would happen when we start this draft the way that we did, which is that there are going to be very few, and I'm going to say zero, other teams in the contest that have a team remotely like this one. His article, looking at how you build zero RB teams, pointed out that you're unlikely to be duplicated or to have a lot of similarities if you just go through and select your zero RB team in the very straightforward way that you should select it. You don't need to then do crazy things to get different. Now, we did some crazy things in this draft, but they weren't explicitly to be different. We just wanted to take some of the values that we felt were out there on the board. The other thing that you're going to see, and one of the things is I pulled up some of the things that we did in the Roster Construction Explorer, is just that, you know, there aren't teams like this, right? We select three very well-established veteran QBs at the end of the draft. That is something that's happening very infrequently, in part because you're not necessarily getting those guys to fall. But especially now in 2022, drafters know that you need to have those, either the elite QB or the QBs in the window. It'll be interesting to see how this plays. Having the three instead of the two just does change the dynamic. We do get a couple of pairings with wide receivers that we like, and our overall team is just very, very good. So if we did get surprising performances from those quarterbacks, I mean, we're going to be in the mix there. So Colin, start us out, explain to the listeners what we did.
Yeah, so let's do a rundown of the fall draft for ourselves. So we did pick out of the ninth spot. Then we go Devontae Adams there. We take Deebo Samuel in the second round. Jalen Waddle followed up by Deontay Johnson. Then Juju Smith-Schuster. J.K. Dobbins had a little bit of a slip after, obviously, the news has come out of his injury and situation and status over the last couple of days. Then we have T.J. Hockenson, Treylon Burks, Kareem Hunt, Devin Singletary in the ninth and tenth round. Then we go Ronald Jones, Isaiah Spiller. So we have four running backs there to round off. We go two tight ends in with Gerald Everett and Noah Fant. Then we get KJ Hamler, who we just could not turn down at that point. There was a conversation, I think, at the Noah Fant pick potentially around Matt Ryan. I said we didn't need Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan falls to the 16th round. We got Matt Ryan, followed by Jared Goff, followed by Ryan Tannehill. Those were the three quarterbacks we had kind of targeted from probably the 10th round onwards. So to get them all and really looking here at the draft board from the 13th round, where Daniel Jones and Kirk Cousins went, no quarterbacks in the 14th. We get just Trevor Lawrence in the 15th. Then we took Matt Ryan in the 16th. There's three quarterbacks in the 17th, and Carson Wentz, Zach Wilson, and Jared Goff. And then it is Tannehill who we take. So there was not much happening at quarterback in that kind of later portion of the draft, and that worked out perfect for us, Sean, there. Looking through it then, I think the overall build with the depth that we have with the three tight ends that we have taken in Everett, Fant, and Hockenson, then we pretty much got four of our ideal zero RB candidates, but we also took J.K. Dobbins, who was in the sixth round, and then we got those quarterbacks. So the weakness of this team is going to be quarterback, but the other thing to mention is two of those quarterbacks lead to stacks then with some of our other players in T.J. Hockenson and Treylon Burks. So we also have that kind of added into it also. Sean, first question up here. Zero RB or not zero RB, J.K. Dobbins in the sixth round?
Yeah, we get the five receivers first. In the perfect world, we would want this to be a team that had a tight end in there. But we'll just kind of see how 2022 transpires. I don't understand the T.J. Hockenson ADP. I realize a lot of other very sharp analysts are not on him, which is the reason why he's going here. The people who are determining how the community sees his prospects are not enthusiastic, but you go in, you look at him in the Stealing Signals tool, you'll see that he fits in that elite group. And one of the issues with his efficiency, which people have also knocked, I mean, T.J. Hockenson has not exploded in the way that you're getting from a Travis Kelce or a George Kittle, but T.J. Hockenson was being triple teamed last year. He was being triple teamed and playing in a bad offense with Jared Goff struggling to move from this very talented team with the Rams to this less talented team with the Lions. Then after T.J. Hockenson gets injured, Goff emerges, the Lions kind of right the ship and get things going there with Amon-Ra. Now they add DJ Chark, now they add Jameson Williams. We don't necessarily think that Williams is going to play for a big chunk of the season. And now there are concerns on the other direction of, okay, what's his target share going to be like? But when you flip from a situation where an elite player was being triple teamed to now one where you're saying, oh, well, maybe they won't pass to him. It's like if the defense is going to have to deal with all of these other weapons and the quarterback now has all of these other options, the target volume in all likelihood is going to flow back through the star. And so I think that you have to be down on his talent to not like him in this range. And if you're down on his talent, that's perfectly fine. You can certainly not select him here and let him continue to fall. I also think that just because Hockenson is more expensive in tight end premium formats, and maybe at that point does cost you a player that you want at wide receiver or a player you want at running back, maybe you avoid him in that type of format and just really hammer him here in underdog. If he has a bad season, hammering him in underdog will not have helped you, but I think it is a potential way to play one of the outcomes of the season. So again, we're not trying to be dogmatic about the zero RB type of build. I mean, I'm saying yes. I mean, this is zero RB with these five wide receivers and with Hockenson as someone who basically counts as a fourth round player, but you're getting him in the seventh round. One of the things that we talked about a lot and we'll continue to talk about is that don't let the structure actually pull you off of players who are dramatically misvalued.
And, you know, back to Hockenson. Hockenson's somebody who was, you know, a top 10 pick in 2019. And, you know, each season has, you know, I would say has got better. The one thing that's held him back a little bit is the touchdowns. Had four last year, had six the year before. You know, I think that when we're looking at the players that are going around him, I just think that he's in such a great place. I would have been happy, and I was asking, kind of hinting at this when I was asking about who we should take in the fifth, sixth round. You know, I would be as happy to take Hockenson even as high as the sixth. But
and Colin, the other thing there with Hockenson is that he wasn't healthy. And so maybe you want to look at it and say, well, we don't think this guy can stay healthy. And so that's a reason to discount him. But the numbers that he put up last season were being triple teamed and dealing with multiple significant injuries to the point where he finally had to stop playing. So I like the talent here. I'm very willing to be wrong on this one. And as I say all the time, I'm wrong frequently. So this could be one of those situations.
Let's hope not, because we have a lot of TJ Hockenson, but I'm still very bullish on him for this year. When we looked then, the one that you did kind of tease or mention of when we were finishing up the previous show on Thursday was Deebo Samuel. You talked about maybe going a different direction, not for the want of not thinking that Deebo Samuel is going to be a superstar, not thinking that he's going to have a phenomenal season, but more so for the fact that you've drafted him quite a bit. And I've drafted him in a lot of leagues, but I'm at the point where I'm like, these are the guys I like, and the diversification might come a slight bit later. But when we look at it, we have, looking at the wide receivers taken, we have Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, CeeDee Lamb, Stephon Diggs had all gone off the board. So they're the first five wide receivers. I mentioned it during the draft. CeeDee Lamb there is an aggressive selection. Also, I just looking through that team, he has paired it up with Ezekiel Elliott in the third round, which is also, in my opinion, an aggressive selection. And then Dak Prescott in the seventh round. So obviously in on the Cowboys in this build, particularly that was the team in the sixth slot. But when we look then, that means that Adams gets pushed to us. Realistically, Sean, at that point of the draft, I thought Lamb was probably going to be the available option for us. But wide receivers do go off the board early in this draft, and we still get Adams. And then between that selection, it goes Travis Kelce, Joe Mixon, DeAndre Swift, Najee Harris, Mike Evans, Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry pushed down quite a bit there. The team drafting 10th gets him in the second round. Then we have our pick of Deebo Samuel. So I think when we get the selection of Adams, I had concerns that we're not going to get Deebo back to us at that point. Mike Evans went ahead of him in this draft. And then the guys that we really do like at the back end of the round being AJ Brown, T. Higgins, and possibly Tyreek Hill. So looking at that, the player that you did ask about, you were going to mention Dalvin Cook at that point. You had Derrick Henry and the Q as a possible option. And then Saquon Barkley as somebody who continues to creep up draft boards. So when you mentioned on the Thursday show about maybe going a different way for Deebo Samuel, I was very interested to see, first of all, who the other options for you would be there at that fourth pick of the second round. And then after that, we'll dive into maybe how the rest of the draft would have played out had we made that choice.
Yeah, I was going to make a pitch for Derrick Henry. I know that you wanted to draft a zero RB team. We would have had an anchor RB team here with Henry. That would have given us a lot of flexibility to take some of the wide receivers we like late. We didn't end up needing to do that. I love the build that we have, but I don't understand Derrick Henry's ADP. Is the potential for last season to kind of be the end of his run? Yeah, but unlike someone like Ezekiel Elliott, who was playing poorly while he was playing, Derrick Henry was absolutely fantastic. And you're talking about a half PPR format here that's absolutely perfect for him if not for that injury, I mean, he'd be in the first three picks, right? He would have to be based on what his scoring profile is. So to have him in the second round, I mean, I think we could have made it a good argument for him at the ninth overall pick. I don't understand Joe Mixon going ahead of him. I think that's absolutely crazy. The thing with Mixon is you're basically counting on this Bengals offense being unbelievably explosive. And then if you're in the finals, and we saw that Joe Mixon played an outsized role in underdog last season, which, you know, that's going to push him up because drafters are going to really chase the specific scenario that happened last year, even though it's last year's scenario. But with Joe Mixon, you're basically gambling on the idea that in key games, Joe Mixon is going to have a two or three touchdown explosion because the Bengals score so many points. But Joe Mixon is just a guy, and he doesn't have anything like the talent or even the scoring profile to be selected in this range. Najee Harris, with some of the things that we're hearing out of Pittsburgh, with how they are going to try and reduce his workload, which they should. But once you reduce his workload within the context of that offense, then he doesn't have the scoring profile that you need.
Or the efficiency.
Right. And so now you're looking at Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, Leonard Fournette, even though, I mean, he's not our guy. I think those picks make more sense. I don't have a good read on the potential problems for Cook or for Alvin Kamara. We know that one of the things that happened in this draft is that after that original burst of enthusiasm when the criminal cases against Deshaun Watson were dismissed, now what's currently happening with Watson has pushed him all the way to the end. He's not someone that we're looking to draft. He's not on our board. But I think that if he were, then when we're picking quarterbacks there in the 16th, 17th, 18th rounds, he would have to be someone that you look at a little bit. I do expect him to miss the season, though. I think that a little bit of concerns about things that could happen with Cook and Kamara are obviously pushing them down. Drafters are reluctant to kind of lean into those problems, especially after those players drop down in terms of efficiency. In terms of the running back position, and when Ben and I profiled this on our running back preview edition of Stealing Bananas, we talked about the fact that Cook and Kamara both collapsed from an efficiency perspective last year. Now, a lot of listeners are going to say, well, that's fine, but efficiency does bounce around, and it does. But it also is at least a minor red flag for running backs who are getting to the point in the career trajectory that Cook and Kamara are at. And so you have to be aware of that. But Cook and the potential for him as likely still an elite back in this Minnesota offense, it'll be very different. And it seems like very dynamic. To have put him in here at the 204, I think would have been an interesting choice. And we hate to contribute too much to Barkley's ADP rise. One of the things that I mentioned early in the offseason is that I was doing a lot of hyper-fragile builds because I didn't think there was any way that Barkley and ETN and Hall and Dobbins could continue to be as inexpensive as they were. One of the things that we've seen now is that Dobbins obviously is dropping further as injury concerns continue to rise, but Barkley and ETN are going up very, very quickly. So I'm glad that I have some teams that were heavy on them with that mix early on. I almost think there's no position that is too high for Barkley once Stephon Diggs and Davante Adams are off the board. Once those two receivers are off the board, then I think it's almost anybody's ball game where you go next. I mean, we're talking about Mike Evans being drafted at 201, and Mike Evans has been, I mean, at the 202, and he's a player who has not got a profile anything close to that over the last two or three years. So we'll see how it turns out. I wouldn't be surprised if a Brady to Evans combination works, but I think that you have to be aware of all of the different things that would have to happen. You have to be aware of, you know, what are the chances that he outperforms that. It could be very much a situation like we saw last year with Cooper Kupp, where a player who'd been a consistent fourth and fifth round draft pick suddenly becomes the greatest fantasy player, more or less, in history. You're almost making that bet when you're selecting him this early.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think it's interesting too, obviously, with the news of Rob Gronkowski announcing his, I guess we'll use quotation marks, but retirement. We'll see how long it lasts. Hopefully it, well, not hopefully, but maybe it'll be longer than what Tom Brady's was this offseason. We may see Gronk back at some point, maybe, but Mike Evans moving up, and obviously the Chris Godwin injury, very, very pushed up. But what I was going to touch on, we'll go to our team first, then I'm going to ask some questions about some of the other teams, because I think there is some points where people have really either gone for their players or, you know, pushed maybe a little bit too high to get some of the guys that they have got. Maybe Evans is an example off that. But if we had have went with one of those running backs, let's say we get Derrick Henry, let's say we get Saquon Barkley at that point, J.K. Dobbins falls to us in the sixth at that point. Is he still the player you're drafting there? You know, I think based on where he fell to, it felt like he's still the pick. The other players that were going in that range were Amon-Ra St. Brown, Kyler Murray went there, Drake London was in the mix. You know, I think that Dobbins is still the top pick there, probably unless you go quarterback.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you can do is within the context of the rest of the players that we got, you could potentially swap him out for Amon-Ra St. Brown, Kyler Murray, Drake London. Amon-Ra and London especially are very compelling picks right in that range. Darnell Mooney, if he falls one more spot to us, and then you can go with Justin Fields, and I think we would have prioritized Fields over Ronald Jones in the 11th round where he made the Jones selection. So there would be a couple of different options. I think that perhaps that would be a stronger overall team if we went running back there and then wide receiver in the 6th. But partly here, I guess I'm just reacting to the fact that I do have Debo in almost every league, and I'm looking to diversify a little bit. Even in a situation where you do like the player's talent and you think that he's being faded too much as a result of some of the offensive context concerns, at this point, with those concerns being so well known and the concern being also so significant, I think that we're going to have teams get him in that 209, 210, you know, even the 2-3 turn as the offseason moves along. And so a team here where we have him at the 204 is a little bit rich. And because so many of our guys do seem to be, or not so many, because there are a handful of our players that we really like well above ADP, and then we end up with a lot of them, the key thing is to try and also get them below ADP. I've got a couple of articles up on the site sort of discussing that element of it. That's the only reason that I would be off of Samuel there. I mean, in a vacuum, I still like him better than those other players.
Yeah, so it's always interesting, especially when you're volume drafting, you know, players there that you really do like, but you might have drafted them too many times and you're trying to diversify, as Sean mentioned. But yeah, I think Debo is going to be interesting. You mentioned him. I have got him a couple of times at the back end of that second round, so I can see what you're saying with that little bit maybe of a stretch to get him there being a little bit early. But I do think the overall build here that we have done through those opening 10 rounds is going to be quite unique. looking, that's probably the one part of the conversation, I think, Sean, that you have touched on that I have looked at that could have been different. I'm pretty happy to say that I would sit with what we have. But looking through the rest of the draft board, particularly, I guess, from, you know, we've gone kind of as far as the TJ Hockenson pick, but from around 9 onwards where we get Devin Singletary and Kareem Hunt, Ronald Jones, Isaiah Spiller, looking the rest of the draft, I don't think that remaining portion of the draft from round 9 onwards could want much better, particularly as the quarterbacks continued to fall down and down and down, and we were able to take the likes of KJ Hamler. How do you feel? It didn't feel like a draft today outside of the Daniel Jones pick that I joked about, where we had players where we're like, we really hope that they come to us. And then when that pick happened, you know, sometimes you have 3 picks before you and 3 players in your queue go off the board and you're left with nothing. It really didn't feel like that happened with us at all today. It felt like every time we had a pick, we had 2 to 3 options of who we could take.
We did have a lot of good situations here, and that's one of the reasons why we ended up with such a strong group of running backs. Kareem Hunt got to us in the 9th round below ADP, so we selected him even though we probably have a little bit of a lean toward Devin Singletary. Again, the idea there is to make sure you're getting also good ADP values on your guys, and then we wrap back around and Singletary was still on the board. Melvin Gordon was the other player we had been considering. He goes 3 selections ahead of us. We do take Singletary with the even better ADP value of Damian Harris still available, but Harris does look like a pure touchdown guy in 2022. Not only does he have Ramondre Stevenson behind him, but it sounds like Pierre Strong has performed well in early offseason activities for the team. If you have both Stevenson and Strong behind you, they're both more physically talented. You know, your skill level difference has to be so extreme to make sure you carve out enough work.
I would have to think as well that, you know, when I get into a situation like that, I'm thinking this Bills offense is going to be scoring a lot more points and they're going to be in the red zone a lot more than this Patriots team.
They are. And because you mentioned that, I mean, that's one of these situations here where, yeah, the Bills running backs haven't scored as many points as we've expected the last couple of years, but that did change at the end of last season. And as opposed to looking at the end of last season as the aberration, there is a potential element, at least. I'm not saying it's the odds on scenario, but we would have always expected the Bills running backs to start scoring more points. They did that over the last month. They did it through Devin Singletary. They drafted him originally. He's got these great peripherals that I've discussed from time to time. I would think that the 2022 season will be closer to that. Not saying Devin Singletary is going to score a touchdown a game and finish with, you know, 17 to 20 touchdowns, although that's not impossible, right? Again, you're talking about the offense who may lead the NFL in scoring. Definitely only 2 or 3 other real competitors for them for that crown.
I'm gonna jump the shark here, Sean. Devin Singletary could be this year's James Conner.
Well, you've got to go farther than that. I mean, he's going to score 20 touchdowns in 2022.
I'll settle for 20. But when we look at it, I think we've really got a lot of fantastic things have fallen our way in those, as I mentioned, with the option to have those extra selections. I mentioned some of the other drafters and some interesting teams here in it. But Sean, as we look through the draft board and some of the selections, we talked on the Tuesday show about stacking in week 17 and how to implement that. You made a very good point on that show to our team last year who came second, and we didn't have a huge amount of stacking in that. And then in the cases where we had some stacks, which would have been Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, we actually started Joe Burrow in the final week, so the stack didn't really come into play. When we look at some of these rosters, I mentioned the team earlier with the Dallas Cowboys, a lot of guys in there in Team 5, but looking through some of the other rosters then, where I think that maybe a little bit forced into getting those stacks put together. So we do have situations where in the 3rd and 4th round, and again, these aren't call-outs to these picks being bad, you know, but we have Mike Williams and Justin Herbert. Mike Williams did go 1 pick before our selection, and this isn't bad blood because they picked Mike Williams on the Sean. This is a case where getting those stacks, I think sometimes people are really pushing to get them. We have Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes is another one that goes early, and we talked about the cost of trying to implement those in and trying to push those players in. I know people have probably heard it before, but when we look at it in this draft, I think some of the plays that worked out for us were down to that. You know, so we have Ja'Marr Chase as well. Sorry to go back to it with Joe Burrow on one of the rosters, but I think people may be pushing to get those stacks a little bit too much. And then that could be the reason that, for example, the drafter of Michael Pittman, and this, he's probably the one guy you would want to pair with the likes of Matt Ryan, but letting those guys fall. I think a lot of people were just trying to stack or let the quarterbacks fall. And I think that's what gave us those values at the quarterback position.
Well, it is interesting because the Pittman drafter got both of our main quarterbacks that we were looking at. And we ended up with Matt Ryan at the very end, which was in no way trying to snag the Pittman QB away from him, but just the way that it worked out. You mentioned how teams can sometimes be pushing too hard to get those stacks. One of the things here with the Williams-Herbert stack is that Williams actually fell well below where he's been going. And so that once you get that great value on him, it becomes a little bit more compelling to put in with Herbert. You're not going to get Herbert coming back at the end of round five. And so taking him in round four, especially if you had that as a tier break. We selected Deontay Johnson with the pick right ahead. I have a massive tier break after that. When you go down to McLaurin, Judy, Allen Robinson, Metcalf, Brandon Cooks as the next wide receivers going, it's very easy to see why a drafter would simply say, yeah, those guys don't interest me. James Conner was the other player we were kind of looking at there. I mean, Conner has some dead zone running back elements to him. I think that in some ways there's the potential to chase what he did last season too much. But there's also this element where if you're trying to look at some running backs who have both pluses and minuses, who have had two seasons really at this level, but also have done some things in their career that have gotten them off of their first team onto a second team, in Fournette's case, almost off of his second team. When you look at Fournette in the late second and then Connor in the mid to late fourth, I mean, you're getting a two-round discount on what is probably a very similar type of profile. We looked at him as a possibility, but we did decide to stay with the wide receiver, not take sort of an older dead zone running back at that point. So I could see that as a pick instead of Justin Herbert there. That drafter would have then had Diggs, Cook, Mike Williams, Connor, Rashad Bateman, Amon-Ra, maybe then would be able to avoid the Tony Pollard pick in round seven. That's one that I love Tony Pollard. I think that he's going to have a very good season. It seems likely that the split with Elliott will be more than it was even last year. And at the same time, we've seen, I mean, even if Elliott gets hurt, we're now into the situation contract-wise where every year we get closer to the point where the Cowboys are going to feel like they've kind of destroyed this contract situation less by actually just pulling the plug and going to Pollard. But Pollard in round seven, I have a harder time kind of understanding how that works when you can get players like Kareem Hunt, Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, Rashad Penny is a little bit, and so these guys are guys going in round nine, Rashad Penny in round nine. That one, when you consider what they just did by taking Walker, I mean, I love Penny, but that one, especially with how bad the offense will be and with his injury background, that one probably a little bit harder. But then you have Melvin Gordon in round 10. I mean, Melvin Gordon in round 10 is probably at least as good a bet as Tony Pollard in round 7, because if Javonte Williams gets injured, Melvin Gordon probably the workhorse. If Ezekiel Elliott gets injured, I mean, Tony Pollard's going to play, but he's not going to be a full-time guy. And so you still don't have necessarily this expected points profile that you need to absolutely destroy the tournament. So from that perspective, if you have Connor, then maybe you don't make that Tony Pollard pick. Obviously, then you do have to sneak in a different quarterback at some point, and so you have these carry-on effects down later. But those selections are very, very interesting. And I've mentioned a couple of the players that I don't necessarily care for out of 211, but there are also some players on that team that I absolutely love in terms of Marquise Brown, Travis Etienne, Devontae Smith. So a lot, and then Sky Moore later. Getting him in round 8, a lot of really cool players on that team. So it's definitely not something where we don't like the 211 build.
And that is going to get us towards closing out today's episode of the show. Hopefully you've enjoyed both the draft and the recap. I'm hoping, Sean, that this is one that we have to come back and listen to in January, where we're saying, this is a repost of the show. This team is charging towards the $2 million top prize. Let's hope that's the case. We had best ball tournament over the FFPC last year that that was the case, and we're hoping to go one better this year. As always, signing up for a RotoViz NFL pass over at rotoviz.com as a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10%. That will get you that discount, and use the code RVRadio2022 to access that. Have got a lot of interest in the listener league. So if you are interested in playing in some of the listener leagues over at the FFPC, they will be $35 entries. I'm currently communicating with the FFPC. We may even do some of the Superflex best ball tournament drafts as well as listener league. So we'll see how things play out there. But if you are interested, let me know on Twitter at Overtime Ireland or email them over at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Make sure you are reading all of Sean's work up on rotoviz.com. It will help. Each and every time you read it, you're going to learn something that will make you a better fantasy football player. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My co-host is the, as mentioned before, Sean Siegel. Until we're back with another podcast, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.